Hello and welcome to it, Atari's Adventures, Episode 10, The Nexus. All right, this is episode 10, guys. Can you believe we even have 10 in us? Wow. today I have with me Tim Bancroft, of course.
What's Hello!
Not Jay, our newbie.
Howdy, folks.
And, of course, our veteran, our hardcore mustachio veteran, Kevin.
Yeah, I still think he looks a lot like Batu Delhoren.
Hey, I really did. Batu in the live action Antares movie. I want a plasma pistol. It's the only thing. I need a functional
plasma pistol. Okay. I'll look at producing one of those.
I appreciate it.
And hopefully Sergey will wake up from his slumber and possibly join us in a little bit. But if not, it's okay. It's okay. We're talking today.
He got to sleep an hour later than you and I did.
Oh, well, you know, it is what it is. So we're talking about the Nexus today. What is the Nexus and what it's entailed, where it came from, and what the idea and things like that. And I think Tim can better answer, of course, where it came from. But
okay, let's start out with a quick what is and then where it came from. So here we go. So I've just switched screen. Excellent. To that front screen. I don't know if you can see that. When I switch screen, I can't see what's actually being shown. So there we go. Okay. Right. It is www.gatesofantares.com. There we go. Up there. And that is the website on which the Nexus sits. The main thing about the Nexus now is that it is a sort of like a wiki plus about Antarian space. So it's got all the information you'd ever want to know about Antares factions, all the information that's been published, as well as a whole bunch of extra articles, as well as a whole bunch of players articles, as well as it's where we keep the rules updates, the errata, and goodness knows what else to do with the rules. That all comes under Rule Central here. There we go. Rules and updates, characters, rules, insights. We've even got some rules advice. And then there's some tactics articles as well. And finally, there's a whole bunch of game resources which are useful. As I said, it's got loads of information about the factions. We've got goodness knows how many more scenarios up here to supplement the ones we've got in the supplements and in the core books. And what we also do here is add in loads more backgrounds. This is where the wiki parts of it comes in. But there's also a whole load of things which players have submitted, which is their own background, which is their own, here we go, let's go to community, which is their own down here. It says personal shards. So whilst we've got a showcase, it's personal shards is what individuals have written about their own interpretation of Antares. And then finally, we've got event reports and groups and that sort of stuff. But let's start off. So here we go. This is the main front page you'll come into whenever you're shown. There's a bit of getting started over here. Forget this bit on the left where it says connected and all the rest of it. That's never really worked very well. And I'll come into why that's never really worked very well shortly. And then if you come down, we've got the news. Here we've got the action fiction competition results. Hooray! And then the action fiction competition closed. Somebody on this podcast was one of the winners on the action fiction competition.
Oh, not Jay?
No, that was just definitely not me.
Yeah, so Kevin was one of the winners, or at least Kevin and Laura were one of the winners on that. But we can go on to that in a minute. And then below that, so it's getting started, shows you what the army lists are up here. Here we go. I'll just there. You've got getting started articles. So starting up in Antares, I think, was written by John Harrington, who lots of people know. Expanding the Concord from Zelda's Horizon was one I wrote. It's all that sort of in intro stuff, which beginners actually find really useful. Then we've got the showcase, which shows players' armies. So here we've got a whole bunch of ones here. We've got
Carl. Man, that C3 Reapers looks awesome.
They are really nice, aren't they? And Carl Evans is camo looks really excellent. Carl Evans is ex-British Army as well, and I think he wanted his Concorde to actually have proper camo when it came into it. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Andrew Martin's Drifting Lotus. Yeah, Saurians. It was wonderful. Basically, loads of stuff. And then the bottom bit just shows the articles as they've come up in time order. So as you see here, we've got a highly commended story, which is Z342. We've got another highly commended story, Demon Hunters, which is one of the other stories. Here we've got one called Spill, another Beating the Odds, and another one, Opportunity. I think yours was Spill, was it not, Kevin, if I remember?
Right? No, it was Beating the Odds.
Beating the Odds. Sorry, I forgot which one it was. It's been months.
All right.
And then you've got other things like additional scenarios. So there's a solo scutter racing scenario. This is what I'm talking about just here, is background. So we've got a little bit of information about what are gate builder ruins. Are they artifacts? Are they ruins? What is the difference? That sort of stuff. And then we have rules mods, special rules mods, which we use for games day, which lots of people now use for the regular play. I'll come onto those in a minute, because they sort of incorporate the latest feelings which we at Warlord, when I'm actually working for Warlord. Obviously at the moment I'm still on furlough, so all of this lot is purely voluntary. But those are the rules which actually we think will help play particularly, and they're also rules which have been incorporated in version 2 anyway. And then we've got additional scenarios. So Run the Gauntlet, which is a solo scenario, which is produced for the lockdown. Safari, which is also produced for lockdown. And then we've got bits of terrain. And then we've got information on, like here, information on the next games day, which is going to be the Phantoms of Grem Linkart.
That's easy for you to say.
Well, actually, do you want to say it properly, Kevin?
It's Grim Link Cat. That's named after my cat, Gremlin. God rest her soul.
And when she died, someone wrote in and said, we really ought to want a Gremlin, because Gremlin has been a part of the entire community. So we had the Phantoms of Gremlin Cut. So that's it in a nutshell. I'll now come back to this bit over on the right. Now, the reason why we've got all these things over here and connected, and we had a whole load of other things linked into it, was that when it was originally envisaged, Rick saw it as a community hub for Antares, where people could actually have discussions about the factions, can actually exchange news about faction specific information, chat to each other and all the rest of it. That sort of functionality started up but never really got live, because our guys were pulled off for some work on our core systems, so that the notification side of that never really got underway, which was a bit unfortunate. But what then happened was that all that community stuff about talking about it, supposedly about articles, about painting and all the rest of it, got subsumed into the main website, which Carl's now had finished. And that should really be a place on where people can actually put articles or should be able to talk about it. And the forums are reinvigorated and all that lot. But the other thing which counted against it, which suppressed its take up, if you like, is that we were expecting the Facebook site to actually just gradually calm down. But what's actually happened is the community has really gone from strength to strength on the Facebook site. It's a really, vocal community. Lots of people get involved in it. And actually, even though it may not look like it, we've actually got a lot of lurkers, which is people who actually read what's going on. Even though, everybody knows what lurkers like, but we do seem to have an awful lot. And I occasionally get comments from lurkers saying, I saw that, da-da-da-da-da. And that's absolutely fantastic. So really, all the social side of it and everything else and who your factions is has been subsumed into our new online offering and our community site on warlordgames.com. And the other half of it has remained on the Facebook group, which is absolutely fine, because lots of people love interacting with that Facebook group. And there's loads of stuff, and it's a really active community.
Yes, it is. And if you have nowhere else, Like, if you don't have any of the models or anything, you're still curious and you're one of those lurkers, the Nexus is probably the perfect place to start.
Especially jump onto a podcast.
Yeah, that too.
Or jump onto a podcast. Yeah. Let's have a look at this. So, community. If you click on the community thing, as I've just done, not Jay's just mentioned podcasts. We've got a little personal shard here, which is useful for blogs, podcasts, and channels. I mean, mark it as personal shards, and you'll see personal shards all over the place because that's what individuals contribute. Sometimes it's their own version of Antares. Sometimes it's comments like this here. But I'll show you what the other personal shards are. But for the time being, we'll come on to a list of useful blogs and videos. So you've got a whole bunch of blogs here, Vortex Zone, which is Seb in Paris, David Horobin, who listening to port, who lists loads of different lists on listening to port. He's also been a great listmeister for version 2 as well. Fantastic. Vardos Kadix, who also was the winner, I think, of the fiction competition, has his own fiction site, which has got loads of stories in it.
Yes, it does.
His stories are awesome too.
Which is absolutely fantastic. So it's well deserved win there. And then coming down, oh, look at that. Look at that logo slap bang on the screen there.
What's fantastic. That?
I don't know where that comes from. Right. So it's got blogs we think are worth mentioning. And the two, obviously, who we're giving rather a lot of page space to right now are Tabletop Warlords.
Hey, there they are. Look at that. We're
down there. And, of course, Rocky's War Room, which we're on at the moment. But there's a few others who keep coming on. So Martin Otten comes on from time to time. The incomparable James Waffle keeps painting a few Antares models from time mm-hmm. to time. But even if not, he's really worth looking at. Mm-hmm. He is just so awesome. Then we've actually got some straightforward podcasts. Obviously, that's Jan Rudolph is the German one at Galatea Prime. And Freeborn Shard has been fairly quiet, mainly because I got so fed up with countless Windows updates faffing up my recording studio that I just had to give up. It was just awful. So I've just been focusing on other things at the time being. So that is what's on the podcast thing. But if we just go on, you see that little personal shard logo up the top right there. If we come back to that main page, if you click on personal shards, it takes us into what the community's contributed. So you've got you've got Converted Concord, which I've forgotten who did that. So if you have a look at them, that was John Davenport, and he
that's a cool conversion.
Lovely conversions here. So he's got different heads there, but he's also got some specialist troopers with various things on them. And those articles are well worth looking at. So all of these are what players have contributed. You've got some personal shards about misgenics. You've got Geordie Irvin's community campaign from a year or two back. And we've got some drone options or critical point multiple objective missions, which are a way of actually doing scenarios where you just pick out your scenario and your objective from a load of cards. Concord drone experiments, you know, what you could do. So a gun drone squad, somebody suggested. A new who multi-swarm. A new who medic. So he's actually more medic. So it's quite expensive, but it's a nice twist on it. In some ways, it reminds me of some of the Star Wars medic or healer books that actually came out a few years back. So that's personal shards, and that's a fair amount of community contributions there and community articles. But we've also got community showcase here, and obviously I'm not going to go into tournaments and events because it's been a bit dry for 2020, shall we say.
Yeah, that's it's off.
Yeah, so
there's a plague about.
Yes. So we've got Peter Kieran, put some custom-built terrain and a few other things coming in. The stuff like Peter Kieran's article and perhaps even the Converted Concord article there by John Davenport are the sort of things, really, which we ought to have on the main site. And then from now onwards, I think any such articles will really go onto the main Warlord site under the Antares banner, because that's starting from scratch. It will replace all of this lot, and that will free up the Nexus to be what it's actually really best at being, which is a home for all the Antares knowledge, a home for all the Antares wiki, as well as rules advice, rules variants, and scenarios and that sort of stuff, which is what it really needs to be, together with a whole set of backgrounds. So if I click on background, you can actually see what we've got here. If do stop me, guys, if I'm rabbiting on. So
keep going. This is great.
Yeah, so what we've got is a Gate Builder Ruins or Artifacts there, which is an article I wrote just before lockdown, I think, which sort of goes through what artifacts and Gate Builder Ruins actually are and what's really rare. So actual Gate Builder Ruins are really, really rare, but there's loads of stuff from former eras. Mm-hmm. And indeed, whilst Battle for Xylos was our first supplement and people expected artifacts to be really common, actually the main reason for having the Battle of Xylos as that first supplement was that it was a major find. You know, this was not just Gate Builder Ruins and artifacts, but actually Gate Builder site that was actually functioning. Unfortunately, as they then found out, because not to give too much of a big spoiler, somebody got trapped on it. Yuhamnu got trapped on it when she went to poke around in it. But there's other things on here. So you've got a Imtel timeline, and this is related to the Splintering Shard, which goes through the latest timeline in the Year 7 Age, you can say, up to current time, which is about 1324. And that gives some background of what happened. We've also got a Gazetteer of Systems there, and we've got other bits and bobs of fiction which come up. But there's all sorts of other things about panhumans. There's trade and commerce articles. There's all sorts of background articles which are far richer and provide a lot more background to the Antares universe than you might expect to find elsewhere. What else? I'll switch on to... Here we go. Guided tour here. I'm going to have a cup of tea. I've drunk my tea. Hold on. That's my last...
Well, I think is great about this is not a lot of people know there's this much information on here.
Oh, yeah. And
it's one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, especially visually, so you can actually see, because when you search for it yourself, it's a never-ending black hole of information. And sometimes you gloss over something, you don't realize, oh my gosh, all these scenarios are here, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And there's solo scenarios, the Gulper Safari and Run the Gauntlet, you know?
Yep.
And that's wonderful, you know, that's there. And not everybody knows that. So,
yeah, right. There's we've got, I tried counting, I know I counted them at the start of 2020. We had something like 60 scenarios for Antares between the supplements and on the Nexus as well.
Yes. And like when we and Sergey are like, when I'm trying to design something, or like when I was even writing stories for the fiction competition, like there is just so much backstory. And I'm someone who, I have always loved the fluff of war games. I love about the setting, and it's just, like Matt said, you can literally go down a rabbit hole and spend an entire afternoon reading articles and have plenty left to go. And it's great. I don't know. It's I cannot recommend people enough to just jump on and check out what it is, because there's so much information.
Yeah, and before you know it, your wife's going, "You're still staring at that computer?"
Yeah, but it's a different article. It's a different article.
Yeah,
absolutely. So there's a bunch of other ones, including we've got links to Bromvar here, which take us back onto the main site, so you can grab Bromvar. And obviously there's reports as well from the Antares Games Day here, which have actually got links into the other scenarios as well. Here we go. This is a report from that Games Day from last year. There is Jan being prevented with his winnings, and there is John Harrington being presented with his winnings for the paint competition.
Yeah, I know that guy. I know that guy.
That handsome everybody.
Yeah. So as you can see, it's not a case of pouring stuff onto people, because we don't want these games days being used as, if you like, or dominated by the people who use them to actually try and just buy loads of goodies and that sort of stuff. The main thing about these games days at Warlords headquarters, and we haven't had one for a while because of the coronavirus, but the main ethos will remain the same, which is it's there to have fun. It's there to have to meet other people's. And if you do something which is particularly outstanding, you know, like win, like Jan, or actually have produce a really funny painting competition entry like John, and John just regards the painting competitions to have, as an opportunity to have some fun, or have a great army like Steve Porter, that's fine. But the key thing is actually enjoying it and having some great fun. You can see these are the tables we had. So if you want to look for some terrain, there's some ideas here. So we've got Taskar down here, the Tundra. We've got Dalexion, Dangerous Swamp, on which we had some ducks, which the Bratislava contingent really quite liked. The ducks, I think, are over there. And it came to something when I removed the tables, and they insisted they weren't going to play until I actually put the ducks back.
Ducks like waterproof chickens with kazoos?
Yeah, those, okay. Those sort of ducks. it's become a thing now. I've got to put a ducks out on the swamp table. So you can see some idea of how what we're doing with the terrain for these as well. So whether it's a snow one down here, it's another Tuskar one, and then you've got crops on Tolek, the freeborn settlement at the bottom there, trading settlement. But actually, a lot of the table, rest of the table, is just farmland, and that's because that's some of what Antares is like. And there's another Tolek place with an abandoned village around it. And there's a battle report there, results, and that sort of stuff. And we do that for all the game reports or the event reports as well. And those are on there, so you can have some idea about them. And we then also put the scenarios from those on them as well. Pause for breath. Let's get rid of background for now, and we'll go on to Rule Central. So you just click on Rule Central. And this is where we keep up there. It says they're PDF army lists. So we keep all the army lists in PDF format online. So as they're updated, you get the latest release for free as a handout here. So you just click on that. And so I'll do a open link in new tab. There we go. Look, ta-da! PDF army lists. This is an intro by Rick, and then it goes down, just page down, and then there are all the different lists with links to Boromart's the Nexus and the store and all the rest of it. So those are free handouts, which is always useful. The errata, there's a couple of PDFs produced with errata in them, and then what we've also done is we've got a living errata and a living FAQ. Living FAQ is obviously for stuff which doesn't need erratering, but it's just odd questions like, do my gar really have three shots a turn when they've got a accompanying load of scutter with them? And the answer is yes. And living errata is just like this, as you'd expect any errata to be. So there's core rules broken down into the Battle of the Xylos rules, Crisis Shard. I'm really upset about that. I proofread the Crisis Shard, and I didn't see that as it was missing completely, but never mind, it's there now. And then the addenda for the errata for Groenskirk's Returns as well. So we try and keep that up as more is found. Obviously, we haven't found much lately. We've not had much reported to us, so we're probably up to date on that. And then you crawl down even further, and then more importantly, you've got the rules amendments, which have come out, which are really heftier rules. And they are, here we go. So if you just click into it, rules amendments, so sensor modules, which is used on the one of the T7 options. You've got net ammo, the modifications with the dice on it. And again, these are leader rule with vehicles and a fairly hefty overview of Gar Tetris, because Gar Tetris's proved to have rather a few issues with them. So that's fairly hefty changes are in that. But again, there are all free downloads and they're arranged quite clearly. And then on top of that, you've got things like Mercenaries for Hire, which we did last episode. And you've got a couple of quick reference sheets. You've got a basic quick reference sheet, an advanced quick reference sheet down here. which has got loads and loads of info on it. This advanced rules ref is really useful. You've got the weapon summary up to date, an index, the FAQ PDF, if you want to do that, except all of that LUT has been subsumed into the main FAQ. And Antares Base 1, which is a free downloadable intro set of rules for Antares. It'll have everything that you expect for Antares, and you can just download it and use it for free, and you'll get a real feel for what Antares is like.
I've got a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Jim. The PDFs, are they searchable PDFs, or are they just like a screen print of a hard copy?
No, they're PDFs. They're proper PDFs.
Okay. So I could download the index onto my iPad, and if I want to go find line of sight, I can search line of sight, and it'll actually go find it for me and tell me where to find it in the book.
Yes.
Outstanding.
So that's fairly straightforward. I have a friendship request. I have to deal with that later, not Jay. So we've not done anything. They're just straightforward. They're just normal, absolutely normal PDFs. I'll try and get into the rules amendments one, actually. So that'll probably unfortunately open it. But I don't think I'll be able to do a search from here, because here we go. Let's have a look. Tetris. There we go. Tetris search. Voila, sir. So that's just normal everyday PDF function. It's just
man, those I loved those tech terrorists until they got nerfed. No, just kidding.
They are still one of the best. They're still one of the best auxiliary choices you can get. They are just so useful. It's come to a point now that it's a war between them and the Virai star probes, but people tend to shoot them when they've got a spare shot.
Oh man!
Rather than ignore them, which is what they do to most other probes.
I ignored them for a while.
Don't do that.
Until I realized what they did.
No, don't do that. They are just nasty.
They're
nasty
brutal.
They are so useful. And Gar rely on them. I mean, I tend to have two waves of Gar Tetris if I can. So a group who goes up front and is there and will probably get shot out, and then another group who can come in and fill in behind them when they get shot out. So it's,
when the one of you goes down, pick up the detector rod and keep moving forward.
Yes, this is your job in life, Gar Trooper. Oh, yes, sir. Oh, I'd love to love it. So there we go. That's great stuff. I'll go in here on background. I think I've mentioned bits and bobs in the background anyway, but you've got loads of other things. We've got trade and commerce with Gar, people looking for reasons why. Basically, they're saying, would Gar trade? And then other people would say, we're saying, well, why would you've got the reason for traders across Antares? Do you have non-human traders? So we wrote up these articles. We then collated here in Transmat Technology all the different background texts to Transmat and put them in there and added on some more stuff, which I think we've included in version 2 somewhere along the line. Complete Drone Scourge, for example, takes you through to all the resources that we've got for the Drone Scourge. You can do that from time to time. So that's got the Drone Scourge itself, book itself. So you can go into the core website and download stuff. Got links to people like Joe Galeas, who is the intelligence mandarin, Yuhu, lovely character there, absolutely superb. And then you've got Taras Kalaman info. You know, clicking on that will take you to the info here. Taras Kalaman, I think you painted him for me, didn't you, Matt?
He
looks superb. Yeah, he looks really lovely. Absolutely superb.
Thank you.
And he's got all the background and the stats that you need for him, though it's easier actually downloading the books. You also get all the scenarios and more detailed background there for him. Links to Starship Corridors, and of course you've got links to the Virai Faction page and some of the other scenarios to do with them. Shall I go to the Virai Faction page as an example faction page?
Why not?
That's
good idea.
There we go. So, faction page, right. Background at the top, major background in the first swathe, and then that's their logo. The Vera logo is just the one that's used by all the other factions, because the Vera themselves don't see the point of having a logo because they're the Virai. Of course, they know who they are. They're in communications with every single Virai that's around them. So why have a... We know if you're Virai or not, because if you don't talk to us, you can't be Virai. So that goes down, and then also on the faction pages. So that gives you a list on the free online army lists. So there we go. And then you've got military, so it gives you military background, and it gives you links to an articles like here. We're talking about going down the rabbit hole, so I'll just link into there. Virai arms and equipment, and that gives you who the actual Virai, main Virai types are, their weapons, what they borrow, what they take from other people. So that's one of the weapons.
I was going to say borrow.
Okay. Let's say just long-term lease.
Yes. Borrow with air quotes.
And then they sublet it to their friends.
Yeah, I think that is it. There is the... that is it. And then it just says a bit on alliances, who they deal with. And then you've got a breakdown of what squads they have. And this is the same as for all the other factions in this. You've got the tactical options, Vera first instance, second instance, tertiary supervisors, their constructed drones and warrior drones. I have to say, the Vera are a bit easier here. So basically it's leaders, followers, two sets of followers.
I love that, because you can click it and it goes right to it. I love that. Yeah.
So here we go. That. Quick clink. There we go. Vera constructor, scavenger, mining drones. And it tells you what combat level they can be used. Basically, they can be taken almost all levels. Where the drone scourge returns, that's the book, and where you'll find all the detail about them. And
long-term loans paid in blood.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. That gives you overviews and some ideas of how to do with them. We then also then have links to assembly instructions, or pages or anything else, and also to a few other. Here we go. This is Rocky's. This is a link to you, Rocky, of course, where you assemble the scavenger drones. You've done some great assembly videos. Really have done some great Thank assembly you. Videos.
I've got more coming this week,
which is why I linked them. Then it's things like this, you know, Fade Knot, who's always has wide words, and he comes up with a few tips. Piston looking thingy on the legs to the back, which is that piston looking thingy down there, which people don't notice when they actually, even when they have a look at the assembly instructions. So, yeah, so that takes you straight to the individual pages, and then, yeah, the star probes and all the rest of it. And then we have a quick look at how do they play. But obviously that's a really, really quick look, because there's so much to say. We talked about how you play the Virai a couple of episodes ago on this, and I've also done one on Freeborn Shard, and then other people have done lists and different ways of using them as well. So there we go. And then, of course, we have links to where you find them on the store.
I think that's the very important, Tim, and I'm going to highlight that. I think it's really important to have a short synopsis of how they play, even though there's tons of different ways. Yeah. When you're looking at a new army and you've never seen it before, and you kind of read their background, but you've never played them on the table, and that right there kind of gives you a brief overview of, you know, like of their style and their play style. So you have an idea going in. Oh, okay. So they play like that. Let's try it. A lot of people don't like, you know, there are a lot of people love that. And a lot of people don't like that because they just want to find out on their own. Kevin. And
you have to pair up with a ginger and just throw everything at the wall. And, you know,
yes.
And see what works with each
other. Or a man with a heavy mustache.
yeah. Yeah, sure. So it's here if you want it, and of course you don't have to read it. This is the overview. So I went to Game Resources Factions. And it just says, as you can see, the web page is faction-overview. And that's just got a quick overview of all the different factions, and in two paragraphs here, for example, we try and summarize what the things are like, each faction's like. So high points cost with C3, but very powerful. C3 great players who like to keep a distance, perhaps finesse visually, and that sort of stuff. So there's really one sentence, one word descriptions of each of them, but it's all there. And then you can link to Nexus focuses, a few supported lists, as you can see all here. Aston Howe's legs are probably out of date now, as he hasn't linked in with the latest rules and stuff yet. But we keep them on there, though, because they give a really great step forward. And then you've got things like Varroa Drone Scourge, which we've just seen. So, yeah, it's there. Rules Central, what can I say? Rules Insights, that's an interesting thing. So that gives you a few insights from which we put together. So why would you take army and unit options? How to actually do it? A few hints on unit model statistics. That's an overview of that. And then a quick word from the ref about tournaments and rules insights from that. Deployment depths and how that changes the game. How reactions work. Using despimmers and grenades. So that shows you how the grenades stack, that sort of stuff. And also a general intro to new who could be quite complex. So there's loads of stuff on here in terms of insights and how to use it and what to do with micro X's, mod units, and that sort of thing. So it's just sort of overviews of things which are at various levels of detail. So I think Distort Spinners, for example, goes into loads of detail, as you'd expect from something which says just two weapons, whereas some of the others go on stuff on a much higher level. So this goes through compound, SV, allocating hits, limit with grenades, shows how many you can actually have. So it stacks out at, say, limit three. It stacks out at three grenades. Over your distort spinners with some commentary on it as well. There we go. Then there's examples. And that's rather a long example. The reason why it's such a long example is it's a really complex situation which we set up, but it takes it through and answers all the questions which you might possibly have on D spinners, for example.
Yeah, that's so, something so different. D spinners. When I first looked at it, it's a really different concept. On, well, I'll let you.
Yeah,
it's D spinners were pretty cool.
Yeah, they are indeed. So there we go. So I'll take us back. So this comes back down here, and again we're just going back to the personal shards, which I've already shown you, but there's all sorts of stuff here, loads more, and we were loading more up. As I said I can see this though starting to back away from being on the Nexus, and actually, to be honest, on the core Warlord Games website. So there's loads of articles which probably now ought to be on there. So, for example, Wayne Clayton's series on pan-urban city planning and society. Absolutely fantastic. Really lovely. Maybe that's something that ought to be kept on here because it's a really solid background. But some of the rest is some of the other articles are things which, you know, like Vardos Kadix, for example, or other community provided background and armies, like Carl Evans is there, I've just highlighted at the top there, should probably be on the main Warlord website under the community section. So that means we could actually start using the Nexus for what it's really best at, which is providing all that solid background that you need for Antares, or that you might want for Antares, as well as all the rules questions answered, as well as all the updated rules and modifications and the PDF army lists. And if you want to, there's a little bit of a tip there, a PDF which you can download, which says what standards you should follow when you write for Antares on the Nexus. I think for the time being we could run out of that. Some people, I quite like this one, which a number of people set in that saying they really love Nurk. How do we include him in our games? So Chris Campbell said one thing, you could use him as a
single. I love that model.
Yeah, just crazy little model.
Rescue Nurk. I have a couple rescue the Nurk.
Yeah. And stumbling about.
Yeah. Tony Rex came up with the healing staff, and then Rick and I just came up with a couple of ideas. So you can give him a command of 9 of that sort of stuff. So you can actually use these things. And some of them, whilst Rick and I provided these and we discussed them, there are actually personal shards, as it says here. They're actually there for, they're not core, but they're there for anybody to use should they wish to do it, or should they wish to explore it in that way. Right, I think I'm out for the time being, and I'm starting to get hoarse.
So let me ask you this. Now, I know the Nexus is this awesome website, but is the Nexus an actual thing in Antares? Like, that's what I wanted to get into.
It's another name. It's another name for the whole of the Antares Nexus itself. So, if you imagine, let's see, maps. I'll do a quick search on maps there. Intel, maybe one there. I don't know. I hope so. That's the too much there. I'll have to pull up I'll pull up a map shortly, which but probably best if we
okay, no
take,
worries.
Take it off. But
just for those new players out the actual, there.
Yeah. So if we look on here and actually on the logo at the start of the episode, this is the core Antares map from the main rule book, which actually is a political view of the surface of Antares, the giant engine. And because it sits at the center of all these wormholes and offers gates to all those different areas, hence you have the gate builders, it's actually called the Nexus, because it is that central point at which all the Antares wormholes go to. And then you pop out of a wormhole, say, somewhere in the determinant down here, and then you can travel across the surface of Antares until you're within the area generally controlled by the Isaurian Shard, and you can pop into another gate, say there, and it will almost certainly be an Isaurian planet or system, even though this point and this point, who may just be, say, I don't know, 40 AU astronomical units apart across the surface of Antares, in real terms, they may be 100 light years apart, or may even be 10,000 light years apart. You just don't know, because you could actually travel to another gate, which is, only say tens of thousands of miles or kilometers distance from you across the surface of Antares, and very suddenly good. Find yourself 100,000 light years away in real space.
I popped the map up there.
Yeah, thanks. Uh-huh. So you can see that even though you've got things like Concord, which controls this area, and then you've got Isaurians who control this area, and then you've got the Vol, who control a slightly different area, you've got such a... Sorry, leave that up. Whilst you're doing that, I'll search for a map myself.
The technical difficulties were extreme.
Oh, no. Sorry to hear that. Sorry to hear that. We are talking about technical difficulties traveling across the face of Antares. So there is articles. I'm trying to, whilst we're talking, I'm trying to find some things myself. So let's see what happens. Effectively, what distance across the Nexus itself, that's Antares Nexus, is may only be tens of thousands of kilometers. You then drop into a gate, which may keep you in it, in that wormhole for, I don't know, anything from a few hours up to months and months. Then it pops you out at the other end into real space, which may be tens of thousands of light years, or it could be just a couple of light years away. You don't know. But from Antares' viewpoint, it's just there, and that's all you have to worry about it. That's actually all you have to worry about, really. There's no... that is Antares.
Yeah. So I have a few questions about both Nexuses, the website and the fictional Nexus.
Yeah.
I'll go with the fictional first since we got it popped up right here. I was always curious, are there, when factions are traveling between gates,
yep,
space battles on the surface of Antares?
No. Okay. Basically, you will never have space battles on the surface of Antares because what they found is that ships that cause grief or which could damage Antares, the Antares Nexus itself, the machine, that giant machine, which is Antares, or which could actually cause problems and cause damage to the surface of Antares, or which actually could even just cause damage to other ships going around the surface of Antares, are all dealt with extremely harshly by Oberig. And Oberig orbits Antares really quite quickly, not the 300 years that we think of it at the moment, but actually orbits it really quite fast. And if that goes overhead when you are in the middle of a space battle, or you've just caused damage, or you're just about to do something which may cause damage to the surface of Antares, you're in deep trouble, like your non-existent deep trouble.
Yeah. Is that basically instantaneous, or could an unscrupulous faction use that to their advantage?
given the size of the plasma surges which come bubbling up from the interior are actually quite massive, the faction using it would find themselves caught in the same thing that they're trying to cause. So that would be really, really not nice, if you see what I mean.
Okay.
But yes, people do try. I can imagine people actually trying to do exactly the same. So they try and threaten other ships on the surface. But if they're sensible, the other ships just say, no, get lost. I'm going this way. And if you steer into me and they can see just a glimpse of Oberig in the sky, they're going to say, you know, you're on your own head, be it. If you want to do that, then we're going down together.
That's awesome. Okay. Now, as far as the website Nexus, there's so much content that we just saw from, you know, so many different fans and the community and everything. How do you get on the Nexus if you have a great army conversion, or, you know, your own custom scenario? How do you get on the Nexus?
You send a email to Antares at warlordgames.com, or if it's just a general army at the moment, Carl, who's the web boss, is looking for articles along the lines you just said. So great armies, so you can just put your army together and put a little background together, and then send a message to info@warlordgames.com. If it's something far more backgroundy or personal shardy and that sort of stuff, that hasn't got many images, then you go to here where it says writing for the Nexus, Antares Nexus, and the Warlord newsletter, and send an email to Antares at. But that's about it, really.
So
it's
cool.
Just as simple as that. It's just straightforward. The Antares submission guide here has a little bit of background. But if you send it to Antares at, and it, I think it's more to do with Carl's, and I'll send it straight through on to Carl. So, you know, on info at Brute, and they'll do it that way.
What's the spill?
The spill. Well, the spill is actually, if you want to come on back onto my screen, I've got another more colourful map here. As you can see, the spill is here, and it is here, and here, and here. Basically, spill is anything outside the core faction-controlled areas. So actually, the determinant is really a part of the spill, but actually the determinant is the largest area of the spill. If you look around here it's all around the equator, where there's a really dense concentration of Antarian gates, and you've got all sorts of mini empires in there, as well as the more major ones like the Gar Empire or the Algren Prosperate, which has got 300 member systems. It's got loads more, thousands of smaller systems who are part of it, to trade with, but they're not. But they're, you know, they're not actually part of the core member states. They're just controlled by the member worlds, if you see what I mean, or that they're colonies from the member worlds, even. But the determinant is actually a special part of the spill, which is the most violent, I suppose you could say. It's a more war-torn area of Antares because you've got the Vol here coming up from the south. You've got the Panhium and Concord over to the east. I saw Santex over to the west. And then you've got the Algorin, who's a major player, and the Gar Empire in the middle, in the middle as well. And of course, you've actually got slap bang in the middle of it. You've got Xylos, which is at the moment a major focus for almost anybody on Antares. If you look at the map again, you can actually see generally this is a slightly updated map that I'm working on at the moment for input to version 2. So there we go. I think people have already seen the icosahedral shape, which I produced for this, so people can cut it out and make their own version. Yeah, you built it, didn't you? You've got an example of it. But you can see here, this is the area of Vol domination to the south. We've colored it in a little bit. And everywhere you see these brown areas where it says void and void, or just the brown areas themselves, that's where there's an unusually light concentration of Antarian gates, or no gates at all. When you come up to the poles, for example, down here, there's not that many of them actually in existence. So there may be a long distance between every single gate. So if you come out from one, you've got to travel across the surface quite a long way before you get to another. So they're called voids. So generally, often they're sort of places where people tend not to go unless they've got a really, really good reason to go. Freeborn tend to deal mostly in the voids because, you know, the voids aren't actually really much of an active part of the Panhuman Concord, or I saw in Senatex, for example. But there's loads of lucrative trade to be done with the backward planets and the voids and in and around the determinate.
So cool. I think this is the one aspect of this setting which I find the most intriguing about Antares, is I love the way that you guys have organized the world. Like, it is just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, I think Rick did a nice job with this and basing everything around here. So we may have some more spill races, species coming on. I don't know. I just don't know. But there's so much opportunity for people just to create their own spill planets. And that's what Vardos Kadix did. Sorry, not Jay. You were about to say something.
Yeah, just again, for clarification for the new guy, this is a trans-dimensional surface. It's not in our real space, right?
No, it is in our real space.
Okay.
What it's a trans-dimensional engine. So you come. So you're in. Effectively, you're in real space. You just don't know when you actually arrive at Antares. You then travel across the surface in real in. It's actually it's there's a lot of time compression there which goes on. So what seems to you might take a week going across Antares actually takes about 10 hours. So you go across to another gate and then you come out at a gate in another part of the universe, which actually may be at another time as well.
Yeah, I remember that. So is this map a, if I put it into a globe, is this a convex globe or is it a concave globe? In other words, am I looking down onto it or am I in the center looking out into it?
Convex. So it's a proper globe and you're on the surface of that globe.
Okay, so if I'm on this globe and I look up, I'm going to see space. I'm not going to see the other side of it because I'm on the inside.
Yeah, okay. I'm just having a quick look for I'm searching through these laps. Matt,
and when you're referring to Antares, are you referring to the actual Alpha Scorpii that's in the...
Yep.
Scorpius constellation.
Yeah, it's the Antares, which we see from our world, which is about, I think, 300 light years different distance. Can't remember, something like that. And it's that that's the... Oh, sorry, excuse my phone. It's that that we're actually seeing here. I'm trying to get... I'm trying to find...
So we as 21st century humans look out towards Scorpius and we see that red dot in the sky. What we're actually seeing is, if we had high enough capacity telescopes, we'd actually see this surface.
Yes, we would see the surface. Obviously, kind of. Not in these colors.
Right. No, obviously. Obviously. It's like you don't look at the Earth from outer space and see pinks and blues and greens for for the different countries and states and provinces.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's interesting. Yes. You just wouldn't see the same gates and provinces that we've got here. I'm just trying to find, I'm sorry, excuse me for searching through here. I am trying to find a rotational map, but I can't see where I can't remember where I put it, and I don't want to hoist through all my stuff and bore you with that.
So what is the scale that we're looking at on that map then? Is that from for lack of a better term, international dateline to international dateline?
Yes,
you know, from it is. East to west, what would the circumference be there?
It's about 300. I'm trying to remember, actually. So if I, sorry, I'm just trying to be on the gates of Antares. If I pull up the main rule book, you'll have to excuse my notes and stuff on this one. No, go out of the way, please. I'm not interested in that. So excuse me if I go down.
I promise not to look at anything map, that's not supposed to be there.
No, you can look at this. Look at this. Yeah, right. Okay, yeah, we'll do that. Right, I keep forgetting what the where the actual page is. But if you look at the actual map here, which is... it's round about, it's on page 208 of the core rule book. You can actually see that fit to width scrolling. No, can't be helped. Wrong one. Sorry, guys. I need to do view, page display.
No problem.
Two page view. There we go. Thank you. That's what I wanted.
I could have popped it up there too.
Yeah.
Okay. But so it's fairly big.
Can you see that up in the top right hand corner in the core book? It says it's 258. AU, or in Antarian terms, standard astronomical units in diameter.
So that's almost 24. That can't be right. Hold on. 258. Yeah, so times
it would encompass
93 million. That's 23,994,000,000 miles.
I normally refer to it as big.
Yeah.
A long way. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and then Tim, the Oberon, what were you? Oberon, right? Am I saying that right? Oberon?
Oberegg.
Okay. So, and that is a dwarf star that orbits it, correct?
Yes. I think it's anyway. Correct me, not Jay. I think it's referred to as beta, as B, isn't it? So you've got Alpha, which is the giant, and you've got the dwarf star, which we see, I think is called Beta, if I remember rightly. Yeah. And Oberegg is that dwarf star, which it orbits Antares. But in the real world, that's the Antarian world, it actually orbits really fast, really quickly. And it's thought that its operation actually helps keep the gates maintained and operational and functional. As well as acting as a safety device. Whereas what we think it is actually a dwarf star orbiting its planet around about once every 300 years. Antares, and if you put Antares into our own solar system, it would swallow it up, and it would be about a little bit larger than the orbit of Pluto.
Actually, it's a lot more than the orbit of Pluto. The orbit of Pluto is only about 100 AU. So it's 2.5 times Pluto.
It's 40. Yes. Yeah. Pluto's only 40 AU out, though. Or 39 AU out, I should say.
Yeah. When you average the perihelion to the aphelion.
Absolutely. It's Pluto is very, very irregular. So, it's, you know, Pluto's about 39 AU and Antares is about 41, 42 AU in diameter. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. 42 times 2 pi is about 258. So there we go.
Yeah.
So it's really big. So the surface is 258 AU. So even just popping from one star for another, you know, from Isauri to another star, just 10,000 miles difference, you just would not register on this map. The scale of this map from east to west is so huge that you cannot think in terms of tens of thousands of miles.
And that's amazing. I mean, that's amazing how you can literally calculate it and get in your head an idea of how big a fictional game space is.
That's why high sci-fi is cool.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
It's so awesome.
It's just great. So there's loads and loads of space to put your own worlds, your own empires in the spill or the determinate, and it would just never even, it might not ever register on Antares at all. You know, you're just a minor spill kingdom.
Speaking of space, is there any non-builder infrastructure within the Nexus, say, like a fueling stations, concession stands, of that nature, like how you would see like a rest stop on a highway? Is there any thing like that within the Nexus, like a freeborn trading ship that just hangs out there all the time?
There are, well, no, not on the surface of Antares. There are lots of ships which go up on the surface of Antares and stay there for a while. But the trouble is they get eroded away quite quickly. You know, they have to not only maintain their shields against both the pressures and the heat of Antares, but they then have somehow got to start dumping that heat. And there's only so much that their capacitors can take. So they're then going to go back into a real world place, refresh their shields, rebuild what damage they've taken from Antares and all the rest of it. So there's nothing permanently on the surface of Antares except for the gates themselves.
Now, is there anything preventing a ship that is like on the surface from adopting an orbit that was high enough to get them out of that danger zone? Or is there functionality that prevents that?
So Obi-Reg would probably have something to say with it. The other is you could probably go up to about 6 AU from the surface of Antares and orbit a fair amount of time up there and survive. Trouble is, your time scale is going to go completely different to the elapsed time everywhere else in Antares as well. So that's a bit of a problem. But people don't like going up that high because if they stick in the same spot for too long, Obi-Reg starts assuming that you are being a bad boy for some reason and therefore you need to be dealt with.
So it kind of is like the natural like scrubbing mechanism of Antares, is that you can roll the dice, but you're going to get bit if you're not incredibly careful.
Yep. Absolutely, absolutely. So basically, you have to regard surface Antares as hostile simply because of it is hostile. You can try and get away from the surface, but you're then suffering all sorts of time dilation effects which go haywire. And if you go too far and stay up there too far, you're going to get wiped by Obi-Reg as just a piece of debris which shouldn't be there. So there we go. But having said that, there are occasionally you get TORs, transient observation reports of objects which do orbit around or seem to be orbiting in Antares. It's not known whether they're actually there and they're just considered to be junk, space junk, so therefore Obi-Wan's left them alone, or whether they do just fall into a gate and come out of it again, or whether Antares just chucks them out as part of its cleaning and says, oh, there's a load of junk that needs to go up there and eventually be destroyed. It's just not known. TOR 563, which is the one on which the drone scourge were found, was a ship that was, you know, well over 1,500 years old. Probably about, actually, no, it was only about 1,000 years old. But it had its gate activation mechanism was still intact. So whilst it drifted on the surface of Antares, it came close to a gate, popped into a gate, and then it repaired itself whilst in a system, you know, drifting, though, you know, almost lifeless, uncontrollable, almost abandoned, apart from the Viri. And then it would activate a gate again and go back through the gate, get sucked through and get deposited on the surface of Antares again. And it's thought that that's possibly a pattern of how the TORs operate, but it's not confirmed because TORs are so rare. When you stop and think of the huge area, and we've identified probably 700 or 800, though there are, which are still extant, though there are thousands still recorded. It's very rare that you'll come across one.
Mini Wormut has a question here. He says, with the amount of space, there has to be an undiscovered planet species. So maybe some of new factions may be introduced.
That was my question. The next faction we'll be working on, obviously, is the Vol, and I'm working on that. It's no secret that I'll be working on that. The version 2, we've been working on that for a while. We won't produce any other major factions, but who knows? We may be able to produce some smaller spell factions or some smaller spell mercenary hordes or feral hordes or that sort of stuff. And they could just, exactly as Mini Wormut says, they could just fit into, you know, sort of this hole here or this hole down here in the determinant. We're likely to put in the determinant, and they'd make no impact on the general Antares surface at all, but they'd be a great thing for people to actually just run into and butt into and encounter.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also that the ability to, you know, use counts as rules. The Freeborn and the Algorin and the Privateers are great lists to use for rules. And so if you have some science fiction miniatures lying around, aliens, what have you, that you love, it's really easy to do counts as.
Particularly Freeborn, yeah.
Yes, but especially with Freeborn Adventurers list, for example, that's great. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Because they kind of use the baseline technology, reflex armor, mag guns, you know, very common to be able to get a hold of.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So the counts as stuff is there, and players use it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Another quick question. Sorry to.
God,
I know. God,
go for it, Ruby.
Jesus. Oh, God. Why do we have new guys around all the damn time?
Let the new guys speak.
Going back to the map. I'm a geography. I studied geography in college, so I'm all about maps.
Love yeah.
The dots. Are those actual planets? Are those the gates that take you to the planets? What exactly am I seeing when I see
every single Omet dot
there?
Every single dot you see on the Antares political map I've got up, which is this one here.
Yeah.
Every single stop is the location of an Antares gate,
which
takes you through to the corresponding system.
Okay.
So if you like, you've got the Gethdera gate there, which takes you through to the Gethdera system.
Okay.
The Xylos gate there, which actually takes you to the Xylos system, and the planet's called Xylos as well. you've got the blue 519 gate there, which appeared in Bromvar. Bromvar's not too far away. And it's the same with Taskar, if you look, and Zyra, who are mentioned, and then Isauri itself. So the Isauri gate takes you through to the Isauri system and then to the Isaur planet.
Okay. And are these are the gates just open to anybody, or do you have to have a special code to get through them, or
you need the keymaster and the gatekeeper?
I will drive to your house and stab you.
Every single gate emits an electromagnetic signature, which gives us, effectively, it's like handshake, it's like one end of the security protocols you've got, in which every single gate emits an electromagnetic signature, which, if you encode it in the right way and transmit it at that gate, opens that gate up. So all you've got to do is to know what the encoding is to reflect back at the gate. And then the gate opens up, and it will, if you're close to it, it will suck you in, basically, and transmit you through to the other end. So as long as you can work out the key, you could enter any gate on the surface of Antares. And there are about 6 million, over 6 million gates on the surface.
All right. So, and then when we're talking a gate, obviously we're going transdimensional. What is the travel time from the time you enter the gate to the time you exit the gate in relative time to me? I know I could pop out 18,000 years in the past.
But
what is my sensed amount of time of travel from the time I enter the gate to the time I exit back out into real space?
Really, it's in practice, it may take a few minutes in some cases, but the majority of gates probably take an hour or two. From an hour or two up to a week or so, perhaps a few more gates for a couple of weeks, but some take months whilst you're inside the actual tunnel, and others you send a probe through and you never get it back. So it might
take, that's not good,
an infinitely long time. So yeah, that's why being a scout is it can be quite a hair-raising job. So if a new gate comes up, what you have is you tend to find scout ships, find a new gate, send a drone through. And the only functionality that drone has is to say, I'm in a system. This is basic info about that system. I'm now transmitting the key and I'm going to come back through. So that's it.
Sorry, Chris, go for it.
No, I said, I remember you said, excuse me. I remember you said that there's no quote unquote space combat. But is there any ground combat on the surface, or is all the combat done on the other side of the hole?
No, there's no space combat or ground combat on surface of Antares. You know, there's no real ground on Antares to fight on anyway. All the conflict, whether it's in space or on planetary surfaces, occurs in the systems to which Antares is connected.
All right. So there could potentially a new gate opens up, and there could be three or four factions hanging out there, sending probes in.
Yeah,
but they're not going to fight each other on this end because they don't want to get their asses kicked by Antares.
By
Antares B, you know, hovering out there saying, none of that now. Okay,
but once they go through onto the systems,
that's when all hell breaks out.
Yeah, so that's exactly what happens with Xylos and on Taskar and with some of the other systems. Basically, ships were sent through those gates, and then the actual conflict occurs in and around the Antares. So, for example, the Xylos system, and the surface combat is what the Beyond the Gates of Antares game models.
I'd imagine there'd be a lot of blockade situations going on. Probably a lot of people, rude awakenings when they're like, oh, this gate is, and the Algorand are here. Oh, crap.
So on this side, there's just a lot of mean mugging each other.
Yeah.
But now, are these stable holes? In other words, if, let's say, my freeborn come up to a new gate and Kevin's, whatever the hell he's playing this week, because he has all of them, comes out, shows up at the same time, and I send a probe through, and like 3 hours later, he sends a probe through.
Yeah.
Are they going to end up at the same place 3 hours apart.
Is there a fly situation that could happen?
Yeah, so basically they will end up, if they enter sort of 3 hours apart, they'll exit 3 hours apart at the other end. It's as simple as that.
So they are stable.
Yes, they are highly stable, so you don't get jumped around. Indeed, the reason why the question you just asked is so important is that Antares seems to keep track of causality. So if you could do anything that could actually upset causality, some of the Antarian gates start collapsing, and it's thought that it's the playing around with time in some way that actually causes the collapse of Antares.
Mm. Interesting. Mm.
So my wife just brought up a glass of wine, which is wonderful of her.
Fantastic.
Run out of tea. So I'm moving from tea to wine. And I saw in chronoplasticity experiments, and they jump to Xylos, which is thought to have triggered off the latest series of gate collapses and gate instabilities, I should say, on the Antares Nexus. So whilst there's some who've shut down, and there's some others who've been created from odd times in the past, like Taskar. That was a whole problem with Taskar, for example, and the Virai on board. And then there's a whole series of events going on, which is what happened with the Yuham New campaign. And we've got that up on the Antares Nexus website, and you can download all the scenarios used for that. And that's also what led into the Gremlin Cart campaign, because there's using post-gate builder artifacts which seem to be able to monitor what Antares is doing, and they're starting to point to gates which are going to collapse or new ones which are suddenly going to appear. And it's on those which of Yuham News start to try to communicate with the universe.
So that actually leads me to another question. So if Antares becomes destabilized by the messing around with time and also just builder technology in general, is there any substantive research from each of the factions on recreating builder technology? Is that kind of like a no-no? Because you're like, if you do that, it's kind of like letting off like a temporal bomb that's going to mess up Antares.
There's nothing officially written, but my own personal feel is that's what caused a lot of collapses in the past.
Started
to create these interdimensional gateways, and Antares then suddenly had a fit and went, ah, boom. All of a sudden you're shutting down. So at the moment you've got the Vol, who are actually really, really, I've got a strong hate relationship with Isaurians, because they've all experimented with chronoplasticity in the past and they caused a collapse, and they're now seeing Isaurians again playing around with chronoplasticity. So they want to shut down the Isaurian Setatext, or part of the reason for their expansion is to try and stop the Isaurians from generating any more of those sort of gates, which would cause yet another collapse.
It's kind of like countries in the real world, like doing the Spider-Man meme at each other for messing around with nuclear weapons. Like, you have nukes, but I also have nukes. And then everyone's mad at each other for messing around with the destructive technology.
Yeah. Forget Infinity War or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. You start messing around with time, you cause some real problems.
Yeah.
Now, so going back real quick, the big Intel societies, Algorin, Freeborn, all of them are very familiar with gate travel. Is it easy to discover the keys for gates? Like, do they have that like basic underlying knowledge that just makes it kind of easy to calculate that? Or is it still difficult for each faction to kind of figure out the keys for each individual gate?
No, the gates transmit.
Okay, so if you basically understand how to receive this information, it's quite easy to travel around then.
Absolutely. So once you understand how to do it, you can open any gate.
Okay, so that's the watershed moment that every entire civilization has, is they figure out how to exit from their own home gate. They've basically unlocked the key to the Nexus.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. I was curious.
And what is so? I don't know if any you've done any writing on this subject, but what is that like? Like the first step into a Nexus? Like, do you step into the Nexus and all of a sudden the Concord are like, "Well, you are with the big boys, buddy, and we're gonna mess you up"? Or is it is there like you know? Is there any sort of social structure in the entire universe that deals with new races?
There, well, I've actually started writing some army books, which is much bigger background books for the factions. Whether or not they'll ever come out as army books, I don't know, because, you know, Antares, because of the lockdown, a lot of other development, like all, a lot of the other developments in Warlord, is also in lockdown at the moment. So it's been hiatus for, I don't know, goodness, how long? 10 months, 9 months, 10 months?
Forever. Like forever.
One of the core things which came up from that is when looking through it, the Asuran Senatex and Panhuman Concord have got their own services, official services, to deal with emergent races. So it's either with new gates, which they discover and they send something through. So it's first contact sort of teams. But those same first contact teams would also deal with a new species or new race when it actually emerged onto the face of Antares and said, "Look, we're famous starfarers. We branched out from our planet." And then Concord just says, "Oh, yeah, well, come join this, the other 2 million of us here, you know, 2 million systems of us here," which is a bit humbling, probably.
Yeah. Oh, you You're finally like, figured it out, eh?
What an awful experience. Wow. You walk out into the gate and then you're greeted by this like seemingly like really nice guy in like shiny Concord armor, and then like all of a sudden you're part of the Borg.
Yeah.
like two steps and you're already Borged.
Oi, that's not what I wanted.
You're like a celebrity back home. Everyone's watching on their TVs.
Too late. So basically, the Concord service, it does have a name, I'm not going to mention it, operates on a fairly friendly approach, where it gradually pulls you in, shows you the benefits and all the rest of it. Whereas the Isaurian service, as might be expected, is a little bit more hostile, uses more, is a little bit more aggressive and uses more underhand tactics. But ultimately, both of them are set to absorb you. So it's sort of, it's a nice velvet glove, or it's the chained fist. Either way, the same result.
So you want to be a Concordian, huh?
They bring you to like a timeshare in Vermont.
You will be an Isaurian. So you want to be a Concordian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Whereas the Vault... Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
So there we go. No. So the Vol have got a completely different thing entirely. They just assume, oh, it's a new planet. You want to be Vol, don't you? No. We prefer... Great. Thought you might want to be Vol. Bonk.
So we've been ignoring a question from
listener questions. Is how does different factions scout Antares for new gates?
They basically all do it the same way, which is send out a ship, which... on a particular search pattern, and it looks for new gates on the surface for Antares.
Would that be a manned vessel or a drone vessel?
Normally it's manned. It's not very often a purely drone vessel.
He says, I understand Intel societies use drones for that. Do those travel by carriers of sorts before launched to inspect particular...
Yeah, absolutely. So a scout ship, I've been just doing some stuff on Antares starships, lots of stuff on Antares starships at the moment. Basically, a little scout will carry on board it a whole bunch of drones. By drones, we basically mean small spaceships. They're probably about 30 meters long, 20 to 30 meters long. So quite big drones, as you think of them. And they sit at one end of the gate, launch the drone through and say, let us know when you're back. And they then go around, continue on their surface search until they find another one, launch another drone through, and then until they find another one, and so on and so on. Then eventually the drone will come back through the gate, and then they'll go and pick the drone up and say, give us all the information for it. So there we go. Then they'll send a manned or a staffed or a crewed mission through. That crew could, of course, not just take Panhumans. It could actually take... all sorts of aliens, whatever, depending on your species. And they'll go through and have a look at the system and do more detailed scientific surveys and everything else.
Okay. So what makes like an attractive system to somebody like the Concorde or the Azorian, other than the people there that could bolster them? Like, is there something in resources that they're looking for? Is there something in like tactical positioning that they're looking for?
It's always about the resources.
I assume so. What resources are people after?
Okay, well,
yes, all of them.
Not Jay's, not that far off the mark. Basically, you know, metals like iron are in fairly plentiful supply almost everywhere, and the more basic elements are. But the rarer metals are always useful to come across, and the more exotic materials are always useful to come across. And every single gate will always open to something of interest. Normally it's occupied, but it may actually have some technology or an artifact from one of the previous ages on board it. So as soon as you get to a gate, you don't know what it is you're getting. It could just be people on board a planet, and they've depleted their system of resources and they desperately need help. Therefore, they're going to make some really, really productive members of your pan-human Concorde. In which case, those are resources which the MTEL thinks are pretty good resources as well. These are people resources, and it means it's expanding.
Yeah. Companies have entire departments for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, except we don't call them pan-human resources.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in a...
we call them IT.
If you're in a restaurant, they could be called pan-human.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, well, somebody, excuse me. Could someone pick up my drumsticks, please? Yeah, so you don't know, and that's one of the wonderful things about the gates is going through them. And I actually think it would make a great opportunity for a role-playing game, because it just... whether it's freeborn explorers on board a freeborn scout ship, finding a new gate, and you've got so many opportunities for all sorts of things at the other end.
Very episodic, the adventuring.
Yeah,
that would be perfect. Cool. Absolutely perfect.
How fast do these ships move from gate to gate? Are we we're not translight speed, but how close to sea do we get?
Okay,
a bunch of Winnebagos flying around.
The speed of each ship across the surface of Antares is... oh no, sorry, that's my slammer's one. Let's go back and just do the home search. Close. Sorry about this. Splinting shard. If we have a look at splintering, there we go, right, splintering shard. If you have a look at one of the appendixes in splintering shard, right, here we go, up a bit, is that it? No, goes around even further, there we go, voila. The speed at which they go across the surface is actually quite slow. So it's something like, I think it's 10,000. It's only about 10,000 kilometers an hour. So that's generally slow, and you're limited to that by Antares itself.
So that's actually less than orbital speed here on Earth.
Yeah, but that's the trouble is that at the surface, you can see. Can you see what I've just pulled up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get all sorts of terrible time dilation effects. So a close gate, which is 0.05 of a AU apart, so it could only be, you know, it's only what's 0.05? It is 150 divided by 10 and 15 million. Yes, it's only a few million kilometers. That would take you 6 to 7 hours to traverse. So that comes back to you. Actually, that's 20 million, isn't it? Sorry, that's closer to something like 20 million. But it would actually take you elapsed time, 3.3 days. So a normal gate, which would be 13 or 14 hours online on ours, and that would just be 15 million. That would be 15 million kilometers. So, you know, 10 million miles, sorry. So it's actually much faster than that 10,000. Sorry, I was a factor of quite a lot out there. That gives you some idea of the speeds that you can do at the surface. So on the surface of Antares, the ships can only do that sort of speed, but they've got really incredible acceleration. Some of the ships have got the slow ships have got something like 50 G, that's gravity's acceleration, and the fastest
crush like a damn grape.
Absolutely. And the fastest I saw in one's got something like 200 gravities acceleration.
Holy mazola. No wonder they look like they're in exoskeletons.
they're going to end up goo. Yeah. So they actually have to balance, though. But that effectively relies on a field which envelops the whole ship in this GM drive field, so that you actually keep, say, a single gravity inside. But it's got to be, it's a space, it's called the gravitic annihilation, and especially it's a space-time warp, so that inside you maintain that 1G acting in a direction that you like, whereas externally you're actually doing something incredibly in terms of thrust and whizzing from the starts. So you could almost say that Saurian ships reach about 0.9 or 0.95 the speed of light when they go on their regular journeys in between stars in the Isaurian real space empire, but it still takes them, say, 15 years to reach their nearest star.
All right. Now, the gates will literally put you anywhere, anytime in the universe, or is it just inside the Milky Way?
No, anywhere.
It's
known that there are some, how far it is, it doesn't know. It may be in the nearest cluster, so that's the Andromeda cluster. It may be tied to the nearest supercluster, but it's probably just tied to the cluster, but that still leaves huge numbers,
right?
Or it could be on one of the arms on the supercluster, you know, just a little bit bigger than the local cluster.
So if someone was so inclined and they found a gate that puts you out somewhere in Andromeda, say, I don't know, 20 or about 2 billion years ago.
Yep.
You could be able to figure out exactly where you are compared to where you started by knowing all that scientific mumbo jumbo, and possibly be able to get closer to the creation of the universe.
Yes.
By scientific study.
Yeah. By absolutely. How far back you'd be able to go, they don't know. It's just limited by the gates. But one of the things about the gates is they maintain causality in each area. So if you just start to do something that might break causality,
right,
that will trigger off the collapse in the gates.
Now, has there ever been a instance where somebody has gone through, they somehow triggered something by accident, collapsed, and they're stuck on the other side and you never hear from them again?
Yep. Loads of times.
That would suck. And,
so that sucks. That would suck indeed. And yeah, there's loads of times that people have just gone on when Antares is about to collapse. Loads of times people have traveled through gates, which seem absolutely fine. But of course, by the time they get to the other side, Antares has a nervous breakdown and the whole of Antares' gate system collapses and is being rebuilt by Oberegg, but you don't know when you're going to be reconnected.
Has there ever been a time when there, you know, you said in some situations the gate, your gate passage could take, you know, a couple of days or so.
Yeah.
Have we ever had a collapse and someone's stuck in the gate?
We don't know.
All right.
You just can't tell. Basically, if someone goes through and it collapses whilst they're in the gate, you're never going to know what happened to them.
Man, oh man. That's
there is so RPG wise, there are so many different options.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic, isn't it? It's
why isn't anybody doing an RPG for this?
Get on it, Nat Jay. It's all yours.
Oh man.
Because it'll take quite a lot.
I'm aware of that.
I'm having some fun trying to knock together some rules for it, and I've come up with a system which we could use. I'll play with it over the next year or so. But it's just something that we've not wanted not had the resources to put into, I suppose.
The stories would just be so amazing. Mm-hmm. That could come out of it.
The game itself is just lends itself to fantastic RPG. A bit like, I mean, what we've got now is Starfinder coming up with something similar where you're a team of explorers going out to new stars. Are you not?
Oh, yeah.
Starfinder, yeah. So that's
Paizo. That's, who is that? That's Pathfinder's Paizo sci-fi version, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. It's D&D based. It's D&D 3.5
based.
It's like
3.75.
Really. Yeah, 3.7.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty good. I haven't played Starfinder, but Pathfinder.
Do a live game. Follow up.
I could see taking Starfinder and layering Antares on top of it. See that's the route. All right.
That's one route. Another route would be to actually just come up with a D10 based Antares.
That would work too.
Game system, which would work too. You could use Traveller, which is one of the other main science fiction ones, but I don't like the bell curve in Traveller. And we've moved on from RPGs because as soon as you get Imtel involved, you start getting a few pluses which really push you over the bell curve all the time. So it becomes less of a risky situation. So really, you probably need a flat curve. You need a line rather than a bell curve.
We got a listener comment and question here. I have this idea of Algren reconnaissance fleet that travels the Algren surface a little bit like they do in Star Trek, searching for new worlds, researching new spaces, founding small outposts on unclaimed worlds, and testing new weapons. How viable is that, or do Algren stick to their protectorate mostly?
The Algren tend to stick to the prosperate because they are surrounded on several sides by the Isaurians and the Concord, and on to the south, equatorially speaking, is the Gar Empire. So they've got a bit of a problem. But even in their own areas, they just don't have the resources to expand that much beyond it. And whilst they're quite happy to have new people say, can we join the prosperate? You know, we are a bit advanced world. Can we join you? Effectively, the Algren have scout craft because they want to keep tabs on what new gates open in or on the borders of their area of influence. But they're unlikely to have loads of fleets going around. But mind you, there's a lot of scout craft. Anytime you talk about any big Antares faction, even one as small as the Prosperate, it's still big. You're still talking about hundreds of scout craft.
And Bob Bobberson, great name. How large is the Antares spacecraft? How large are Antares spacecraft?
They are a scout craft, is probably about 100 to 150 meters long, depending on the factions. Remember, a scout craft normally has to carry on drones, which are about 30 meters in length. So it's got to be big enough to carry that, and it's got to be big enough to carry all the capacitors and the gravitic annihilation drive. But it would only have a crew of up to about 10 on something 100 to 150 meters long. You then get frigates, which would probably be from about 200 to 300, 310, 320 meters long, depending on faction. And the biggest frigates would be the freeborn trading frigates, which are about 300, 320 meters long. They're probably got the firepower of a good frigate, but they've also got loads of cargo holds and they've got a fair amount of passenger space on board as well. And then you'd find on top of that, you'd find the light cruisers probably going up to about 500 meters long. So that's, you know, they're all pretty big. And then above, only above that would you get the dedicated warships or the superliners or something like TOR-563, which was basically a city in space. And you still get those cities in space. Some of the Freeborn have their home ships, if you like, orbiting stars, or they could go through a gate, but they're perhaps something up to 40 kilometers long. But those are very, very rare, but most ships are between probably around about 200, 300 meters long. You'd get a lot of merchant ships about that length as
well. Yeah, that's a big ship.
That's still big, yeah.
Yeah. He said he saw Kevin's hover car. He's asking, can we get a spaceship, Kevin?
That's funny that you asked that, because the only reason why I built the hover car was to test out scratch building a vehicle, because I desperately want to make a spaceship, because I bought I love to magnetize. I have to magnetize things. And I was just about to say with Tim on the Nexus, you can actually look up, there is a fantastic scratch building spaceship that someone had, yep, right here, that inspired my entire idea in the first place. And it has quite a few very in-depth images, which Tim is pulling up right now, where it shows you that if you have some cardboard, a Pringles can, and the caps and stuff from like different medicine bottles and whatnot, you can literally build your own. And I'm going to attempt to create one about that same scale. And I'm going to ask Tim to throw it on the Nexus. So if you keep your eye out and I get some free time, I will definitely be producing something along those lines. That is gorgeous right there. It was
actually very cool.
This was one of the first images that actually hooked me to knowing about in general, because I was looking up scrap built spaceships, found that, and that's what brought me the Nexus. So my first experience in Antarctica.
Yeah, so Wayne actually used that on the table, as you can see, roughly about the same scale. Sorry, it's so small. I don't want to go into the depths of the pictures to find a big one. But you can see the plow sword, which is the name of the ship. You can see the scale of the figures with it. And you can actually fit an Algorin Liberator inside.
That's awesome.
And it was built specifically, and Wayne says it, but here's the examples: cardboard, ready salted and barbecue flavor. Main
That's important.
That brings me back to the days of Warhammer when I was making stuff out of Pringles cans and like towers, you know, big tall wizard towers and things like that. I mean, I did that as a kid, and you know, you just get spray paint and it looked like, you know, just plain gray, like it was primed. But yeah, you know, because you didn't really know what to do then. But if you have an imagination, for sure, you know, I know that there are a lot of scratch builders out there, you know, that
we have one in our
built. Kevin is fantastic.
Yeah.
We have one in our own podcast with Warmud.
Yeah. And my suggestion, literally advice to anybody who wants to attempt it, like I said, that's the whole reason why I made that hover car, is I didn't necessarily think it was going to come out like great. Everybody loves it, so I appreciate it. But it's one of those things where it's like, if you just go for it and attempt it, at least it's substantially easier than you'd assume. Like it's actually pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Have a go. Because what you're talking about for use on the table for a start is not these 300 meter long ships. What you're actually talking about is a smaller shuttle, which can actually get down to a surface of a planet and establish, most of the time, establish a transmat link up to the orbital shuttle, up to the orbiting spacecraft, which can then transmat soldiers and everything else down to the shuttle, and it's then offloaded from the shuttle. You know, it's so you can make something really cool that goes onto the table.
To give an idea of real world naval vessels, a Arleigh Burke class guided missile cruiser from the United States Navy is about 150 meters long.
Yeah.
The USS Missouri battleship is about 270 meters long.
Yeah.
So, or 887 feet. So, you know, dealing with a, you know, dealing with some good sized vessels.
Yeah, rather substantial sized vessels. But the crew is not going to be as many as you might think, because there's just so much kit on board.
Right.
And the engines take up so much space. You've got so much space for the capacitors and all the rest of it. And the other thing is Antarians are generally used to a lot more space on board their ships than we are. So I write about it in a lot of the Batu stories. Effectively, you've got really quite wide corridors and you've got quite expensive transmat chambers. You know, these are bigger than most of the Enterprise chambers that you see.
Hmm. It's not like the ISS where it looks like a claustrophobic nightmare.
Absolutely, way beyond that. Antari ships have to be big to support everything else that makes them that makes them go. So people just think, well, we might as well just use up the space then, you know.
Creature comforts.
Yeah.
Kevin, your terrain inspired me to build my own Rebel. Will there be any more tutorials in the future? I would love for one of your buildings.
I mean, it's something that me and Sergey talk about a lot. I actually dialed back my work hours. I was working like 60 hours a week in my last position to have more time to create content for everybody. And so it is definitely something that we're trying to get, just logistically speaking, because a battle report, the last one, you know, they take 40 hours to edit just because of the length of the video. So but I'm currently, just like Matt, setting up my office space and my wargaming area. It should be organized here soon. And then once I get a space where I can actually film in, I'm going to really try to basically, you know, and just anytime I'm putting something together, it might be that they're not as structured videos. But either way, I really am going to be trying to do more videos. And the modular buildings are all right. I meant to make a modular building. I only made one segment. So hopefully that will be. I can fulfill that plan.
And I still have some more Boromite videos, Boromite Source of Precision.
Those buildings are so cool.
That Corven is like one of my prized pieces. It went on the top shelf.
Yeah.
You know, the control vent. I have the canister video that's going to come up soon. Me building, painting the transmat, I think it is. And I also have one other thing. And then I'm going to move on to the GAR Sarissa Precision Kits. And, you know, so I have them all. I just got to get through them. And you're right. It takes so much time to edit them. That core vent took me close to 50 hours. You know, with that's build, paint, edit time, everything. So I am looking forward to seeing Kevin's build videos for his terrain, because he's doing a fantastic job and you seem to have a heart for it, you know. So
I want it.
Kevin is very good at building terrain.
I mean, our table is like, you know, and it's a lot of hard work. I say anybody who's making, I'm assuming that's what he meant, is he said building his own table. It's just basically, you know, go through the rule book is exactly what I did. Look at what the terrain that you need for the actual game, what setting you want, and just start going to town. Because it's taken a year and a half, you know, the better part of 2 years to get the table that we have. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of good resources for the basic stuff. I mean, I've used so many different tutorials from so many different people to get this done. But once again, it is just one of those things. It's like, just try it. Literally, throw stuff together. I have terrain that I have thrown away because it doesn't come up.
You learn so much doing it as well. So many different techniques. It's like, oh, I would do that different, you know, and the next one turns out to look better and better and better. And then you have another idea. Mm-hmm. And like my flowers. Oh, you know what? I have my flowers. You guys want to see the flowers, the killer flowers?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've been experimenting with using more translucent materials and stuff. I've been using a lot of like plexiglass and transparency paper and printing to make like advertisements for boards.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. They come up. They really do start looking a bit different, don't they? They're lovely. And you can do all sorts of stuff like that for Antarian terrain because you've got 6 million planets, 6 million systems to play with. You know, you've got so many more. Bob Bobson says, how large are transmat buildings? It depends on the size of the transmat is the answer. Sorry, it's not very big, but the transmat, I've got single-person transmats, which are about an inch or so across, and they're often used in buildings across Antares space where you just want to, you know, pop from one place to another. So you just have perhaps a community area where you've got these single person transmats, or you may have a larger transmat which you see on the some of the Boromite models or the Freeborn transmats. If you read Open Signal, you've got Dave Horobin's story in that, where you've actually got a guy who's got effectively got a transmat in the lobby of his building, and then everybody in that building has got a transmat in the lobby. In their own lobby, not the building's lobby. So it's comes to how advanced they are, how long they've been in the Concorde. But actually, all the techniques and driving stuff is all going to be below ground or around the actual transmat station itself. But you could have one as small as one person, and it just plonks there. Or you could have one which could take a fair amount of stuff, almost. Up to the size of a vehicle, but not quite. Remember, the main thing about the Boromite scanners is that they are designed to send inanimate ore upwards. So it doesn't matter, perhaps, if that ore sometimes doesn't quite make it or you lose a little bit. It doesn't matter. But however, if sending a human, humans tend to complain if they arrive at the destination missing a few bits.
We have been on for 2 hours. I can't believe that. It just felt like that. Just talking Antares.
When you're having fun, time flies.
I think we
get some extra time too. We gotta give him an extra. Yeah.
I think
difficulties.
We've had like an exuberant amount of information thrown at us in this whole entire episode. It's just like, ooh, I got something new to explore because I even saw something new on there.
Fantastic. Loved doing it, guys.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for joining us, Tim. I mean, as always, you are a great man of information when it comes to Antares. Thanks for letting us pick your brain, I should say. And if you guys don't know, it's the Antares Nexus. It is on it's in the internet. It's in the interwebs.
www.gatesofantares.com.
That's right. And if you need to know any question, most of them are on that, on the Nexus. Mm. And I push people to the Nexus when, you know, they ask me questions about the Isaurians or something. Like I said, hey, check this out. Go buy that book, but go check this website out. You know what I mean? So, and I also see a lot on our Facebook page is this book worth it? Or is this, you know, it's all worth it. If you love Antares, it really is. There's so much more information in there. There's rules. There's the storyline, which, you know, I followed. And I mean, my favorite was Xylos, you know, the original, which is like, you know, man. Yeah, see, like Not Jay is all about the original Star Wars. You know, mine's the original. Mine's the Xylos, you know. So for me, That's where I fell in love with the game itself, you know, the storyline and the factions and things like that. So, but go check out the Nexus, guys. And thanks, Not Jay. Thanks, Tabletop Warlords. Let's get a dropkick.
Hey!
I'm sitting in a chair, but
he's going to do it. Okay, Not Jay, your turn. Oh, there we go.
I'm giving you a ha and a ha-ya.
I don't know when the next episode is going to be. We're going to try for 3 weeks if we can. At least try to do something once a month. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be about. We're going to have a kind of a discussion or a little powwow of what we can do going forward. We've talked about every faction. We talked about the Nexus. Maybe we can get more specific with units and things like that. I would love to hear your guys' ideas in the comments below of what you would like the Antares podcast people, even the newbie, can discuss with you guys or what you'd like to discuss. And I know Tim will do the best he can of what he can say, and we'll do the best we can to, you know, get close. So please leave in the comments below suggestions, questions, anything like that, and we'll do our best to answer. So you guys got anything else? Anything you want to say? No?
Snored.
See you all right on the tabletop.
Here you go. And last but not least, from me to you, ta-ta, and we'll catch you in the next Antares Pod.